Hey everybody, this is the Brew Shaman for Crafted For You. With me tonight, as always, I have Alyssa.
Hey guys.
My executive producer. And as always, my co-host.
I'm Chris Nielsen.
So tonight, we have a close friend and actually one of my instructors, Todd Isbell.
Hello.
He is the head brewer at Liberty Steakhouse in High Point, North Carolina. So how is everybody doing this week?
Good. Been a long week so far.
Yeah.
Fantabulous.
The longest week.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's good. Feels good to be here.
Good.
Drink some beer.
It's a nice break from reality, drinking some beer and talking about it.
I agree. So we have in our glasses, Todd graciously brought over a couple growlers. You want to tell us about what we're drinking tonight?
Yeah, sure. So, right now what we have is a, American Amber Ale. Actually, I submitted it to the Carolinas Championship as an American Double Red. It's just a little too bigger in alcohol as well as hop character from a normal American Amber. So, House Yeast is 1272, which is American Type 2 from Y Yeast. The All-American Yeast, I believe they call it. And the base grains was, it's all Brees Malt. With predominantly pale ale malt for the base, with caravine, and I believe a little bit of high lava bond Cara 120, I believe. And the majority of the hops is Nelson Sauvin, which actually I did a hop trade with my buddy Bill over at Linwood Brewing Concern. And so I had 11-pound box of Amarillo hops, and they use that a lot. And I wanted just something different for what I have normally. And so he's like, well, I got 11 of Nelson, so hook you up with that. So predominantly that was the hop, and then actually in the keg is a little bit of Xyphos for the dry hop. 6.5 ABV. And it's the very first pull off the keg. So this one's hazy.
A little bit.
But it's okay. It's B-complex vitamins. It's good for you.
Yeah.
And actually, cheers.
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 Yeah, you get a lot of tropical notes out of it. I like it.
Really a lot.
And it's still really, like you said, you use the high lava bond caramel malt, so it's you get a lot of, like, I don't know, hop, wow. You get a lot of maltiness out of it. It's really nice.
Oh, good. I'm glad you like it. And then, oh, and sorry, then I brought another beer, which is an Imperial India Black Ale that I've had in the cooler aging on dry hop. I think the dry hop is Columbus, which is one of the famous American sea hops that's gets a lot of like a dank or resiny character. And I believe there's also maple and hickory, the black swan, they make the honeycomb wood sticks. And so there's both maple and hickory wood in the keg. But this one was, if my memory serves me correctly, the very end of 2014. So it's been just chilling in the keg for almost, well, a year and a quarter, something like that.
I'm excited to try that.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's a big beer. That's about 9.5%. And I do an India Black every year. But I also do Winterfest every year. Winterfest always changes. So I've done like a Roggenbach, I've done a mildly smoked with peat, Scotch ale, I've done a wheat wine, trying to think of some other things, but the Imperial India Black.
What is actually a wheat wine?
A wheat wine is essentially you make an American barley wine. I guess you could make an English barley wine too, but an American barley wine. However, easily half of your base malt is going to be with wheat.
Oh, okay.
So wheat, obviously not having a husk to it, it's going to be less grainy. And then, of course, you're going to get that soft wheat character. So essentially, picture, it was the wheat wine was actually a celebration of our 1,000th batch, and it was serendipitously posed around the time of the Winterfest. And so it was our Liberty's 1,000th batch of beer. So, of course, for a 1,000th batch of beer, you can't really do a, you know, a really
anything traditional. You gotta go big.
Yeah, you gotta go big or go home. And one of our biggest sellers at the brewery, courtesy of High Point University students, seniors, I hope, But we have our Deep River Wheat, which is just a regular American wheat, unfiltered wheat. And so I decided to kind of use that and then just put it on steroids. And so it was 11% behemoth. It was really big. But that was the wheat wine. And then this is an Imperial India Black. So as we all know, or maybe you don't, those listening, hop character for every beer in the world diminishes over time. And so this definitely wasn't as sharp as when it was first. And same thing with this amber ale we're currently drinking. It wasn't as like bright or sharp green hop character. So that is diminished over time. But due to the nature of the beer itself, it's still pretty hoppy. And you get a lot of chocolate, not roast, though, which is indicative of the that. I think technically it's an American black ale would be the style. And then if you're submitted to for category, it's other strong beer. So it's out of category. Because if I submitted this under American black ale, this would just be so high in alcohol and overwhelming that they would gig it because it'd be out of specification. So you've submitted under another one that would be kind of out of category. And actually, I do that kind of somewhat often.
Interesting. So is it like an IPA recipe, then you're just adding like a little bit of like extra dark malts?
Yeah.
Or are you actually going for a little bit, like you said, there's more chocolate, so you're going for flavor as well?
Yeah, I think that for a black ale, some people call them, like I hate the moniker of a black IPA because of
the, it's having, just the color.
Having pale and black in the same
nomenclature
as I guess oxymoronic, would that be right?
Yeah.
Or idiocy. So I dislike the term black IPA. And I think the Brewers Association recognized that situation. So they're technically classifying it as an American black ale.
Okay.
So that's actually what it's called. Some people on the West Coast call it a Cascadian dark because the Cascade Mountains, or the greater Cascade area.
Yeah.
That'll have, like, where the hop-growing region is in, like, say, Yakima and whatnot. And that's where a lot of those hops are going to come from. And the Pacific Northwest, they like to get territorial with their beers because they love hops, which is great. But I believe from a historical standpoint, that style first started in Vermont at the Vermont Pub and Brewery. The late Jeff Larson, I think, was his name. He wrote the lager book. But so supposedly he did the first one here in America, but I'm a steadfast believer that virtually any beer style in the world's history has already been made by somebody, especially in today's day and age.
Yeah.
And historically, paler colored beers are newer because we didn't have indirect kilning back in the day. So darker beers would have been the norm, and I highly, highly doubt that someone never made a really highly hopped dark beer back in the day.
Oh, I'm sure.
In Belgium or Germany or England or France or wherever. And so that's, but we Americans, we love to like think we invent
things. And claim things.
I think it's just an American.
I'm sure there was some idiot who threw in a bunch of hops and was like, what are you doing?
Yeah, you lost.
Oops.
You lost balance. And then they flogged the assistant brewer.
And they're like, oh, this is good. Oh, we killed him. Oh, well.
Yeah, but digress back to, you asked me about the recipe. So it essentially just an imperialized version of the black ale. And so essentially just a lot more baseball. But if usually for your, from a specification standpoint, I believe the American black ale is loosely put going to be around the American IPA specs, maybe even down to a strong pale ale. So we're dealing with like maybe, I would imagine low sixes would be the minimum, but probably mid six to maybe mid seven ABV. Obviously, you're going to have a lot of your base malt for extract. And then debitter black is one of the key components. And so Vireman makes dehusked carafa. Brees makes midnight wheat, which I think is excellent. So they essentially make a black malt, but remember, wheat doesn't have a husk, so and that's where you get most of that astringent roast character, the harsher part. So that's kind of nullified with the debittered grains or a black wheat malt. And so use a little bit of that for color, as well as you are going to get a little bit of that roast, but it's not intrusive, so it's not into like porter stout territory.
Yeah.
And then in the BA guidelines, they say mandatorily it has to have a little bit of caramel character. So actually, I used in this 100 pounds of Carat 10. So a real light caramel malt, but a healthy amount of it.
Yeah.
So it's highly fermentable, so it's not going to dry or make the beer full-bodied.
So what size batches do you do to put it in perspective?
It's a 10-barrel batch.
Okay.
Yeah, so I don't know the recipe offhand, but loosely put for a black ale for mine would probably be in the order of, I'm going to guess, 500 pounds of base malt, American two-row, and then 50 to a healthy amount of light caramel malt. You don't want it too malty or bready because you really want the hops to come to the forefront. That's just kind of nature of an American IPA. Kind of, you know, India, American, anything. Usually is going to be on the drier side, less malt, especially these West Coast IPAs now. They don't even use caramel.
They just use two row and that's about it.
Like, yeah,
sprinkle a couple little...
yeah. And as a segue, actually, I think, the pernicious IPA that Wicked Weed does, which is excellent, that'd be like an East Coast version of a West Coast IPA. And I believe that's almost all Pils malt with a little bit of acidulated, a little bit of dextrin malt. So it's really, really pale in color. Then they hop the...
Yeah, they have I think they use like four different hops for that one.
Yeah.
Something like that.
So, anyway, so that's two beers we're... the two beers we're have in front of us. And I'm going to sip again.
And he's also drinking one of our beers.
Mm-hmm.
It's good.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Jeff's doing a good job.
Yes. Any other questions?
I was going to say, so how long have you been at Liberty?
I came here, let's see, the very end of 2008. So, or was it 2007? End of 2007. So I guess I'm in 8.5 years. And then before that, I was in Boulder County, Colorado, for about 2.5, or was it about 3 years. And then before that was school in California at Davis. And before that was upstate New York, greater Syracuse area. And that's when I was doing engineering. Originally, I was an environmental engineer. And then I did free help at a brew pub in downtown Syracuse called Empire. And so that's why I fell in love with it and said, you know what? I'm leaving engineering. And you want to have a good time is have the epiphany in life that money isn't everything when you're in your mid-20s. A lot of people don't get that ever. Or they have it, but they can't act too much on it because, like, say they have kids or something and you're not number one anymore. And so, but I didn't. And still don't.
I ended up here.
Yeah.
I was in northern New Jersey.
Oh.
And I decided I need a change.
Oh,
so
cool.
About a little over a year ago, I packed up all my bags and I moved in with Jeff.
Oh, huh. Booyah.
Hell yeah.
Huh, I like that. Yeah, and so saved up for a year. Luckily, I had a good job. And in fact, I had a fantastic job. I had probably one of the best bosses I'll ever have. A lot of short-term projects. So I was in and out of the office a lot. It was kind of like about a third office work, about a third site visits, and then a third about like lab work. So that was a really good job. I was paid well. A lot of travel, mostly New England and Northeast, sometimes Mid-Atlantic. Down to Baltimore-ish. And then, saved up for a year and then moved to California, did the Master Brewer program, lived next door to the women's water polo team. That was awesome. and had probably two of the best instructors I've ever had in my life with Charlie and Dr. Lewis. They're great.
So when was that? How long ago was that you were at school?
I graduated in 2004.
Okay. And
so,
was different scene back then, I'm assuming, right?
I guess so. Especially considering what was not going on in North Carolina. And so I didn't live here at the time, obviously, because I moved here, I guess, 8+ years ago. But I guess to some extent, this is still NASCAR and Bud Light country. But when they flew me out for the interview, coming from Colorado, now mind you, this would have been in 2007.
Okay.
Flew me out for the interview, and it was going to be fly in, be there the whole day, and maybe fly out that night or the next morning.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, if you don't mind, I'll take care of the extra days on the car rental, and I'll take care of any extra hotel rooms or anything like that, but I want to just spread my flight out a week And I shouldn't change any pricing or anything like that. And the onus will be on me for all the other things because I want to check out the area and see what it's like. And so, yeah, I traveled the state. And yeah, I would see Charlotte, Asheville. I think I drove through Hickory. I just did a pit stop there. And then, of course, Greensboro, Winston. And actually was in Charleston for one day. Was it two days now? But anyways, I realized, at least at the time, my thought process was you know, this is going to explode.
Yeah.
And it was what I thought Colorado and the West Coast was like, say, like 20 years ago. Well, now like 20, 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually, that is coming to fruition. This is great.
Yeah.
And so, not only that, but when I moved here, and, you know, of course it was a full-time job, health, dental, all that good stuff. And, yeah, I get to run the show again, which is nice. And so, even, you know, the number of breweries since I've come here, which, you know, that 8-plus years ago, so the number of breweries is, I don't know, quintupled easily.
Least,
I don't even
yeah.
know how many.
Over 120-ish now.
A lot, yeah. And there was probably, I don't know,
there's
30
like, yeah, yeah,
or something.
Building right now, yeah.
Yeah. And so not only have I seen that explosion take place, which is really good, but then there are some breweries that I thought, actually, you know, those years ago, that were mediocre. And they've had, because you have to step your game up.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'm not going to name any of the breweries, but they're doing well now. And I thought they were kind of like, you know, they're all right. But they've really stepped up the game. So even the older school breweries are still doing well. But it is becoming a dime a dozen, I think. And so many people are entering the industry under the, I think, the wrong for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
And just going into it, because I like beer.
Yeah.
And, oh, this is a cool, new, sexy...
Yeah.
Profession. Like, let's do that. I'm like, well, if you don't have passion about it, then don't.
You're not gonna make good beer if you don't have passion behind it.
I totally agree. And so a lot of these breweries that are opening up, and it's good that there are more breweries opening up. But the bad part is a healthy percentage. I'm not gonna say a specific percentage, a third, half, three quarters, you know, whatever. But a lot of these breweries are not really that good, to be blunt.
Yeah.
No.
And there is gonna be a weed out.
Eventually they will phase out.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's actually one of the reasons why I started teaching 3 years ago. Is because I saw that this needs to take place. Of course, having another source of income.
Yeah.
And I'd like to think, I don't know, you'd probably be better than answering this question than me, but I'd like to think I was at least decent at teaching brewing.
No,
because I think I know brewing at least to a level where I could teach it, but we'll. I guess the words. out. We'll see. We'll have to see.
Think you're probably the best professor that is in the program. I think you should actually be. I think you should be leading the program. To be honest, you should definitely be heading it.
On record.
Sure.
You heard it here.
I understand the other professors that are in the program and they have their own backgrounds and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you have the biggest perspective. Like you've gone to school and you've gone through the program yourself. So you put that in your lecture, but you're still brewing, you're in the scene, you're seeing everything that's going around. I'm not gonna say who, but the other professor is working for a larger facility, and I don't think they're in touch with what is actually happening, and I don't think, like, what you're teaching is stuff that you need to know working at a brew pub or a small little place. It's not macro.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, but we do have, because, like, from an academic standpoint, and by the way, I was actually offered the director position, but it's a full-time gig, and I can't have two full-time jobs, let alone 50 minutes from each other. That's just, yeah, I would drive myself bananas doing that.
Yeah, it's a 4-hour drive.
It's not, and I...
For you?
Yeah.
Do you live in High Point?
I'm one of the few people that lives in downtown High Point.
Oh my God.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
So I live above a showroom. So, I mean, for me, it's...
Downtown.
Yeah. So I take Kivett to Business 85 to 29 North
and then
is it 87?
Yeah.
To Wentworth. And I just wish, I just wish it was either Forsyth Tech or Guilford Tech, because
or even if it was A&T or something.
Or yeah, or
I think that would have been a great program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you there. And so, but we do have a good base as far as the scope of expertise, and so you have myself, which is I've only been brewing in a brew pub environment, so I've never been in a production brewery.
Yeah.
So that'd be a gig on me, and I've never had to go out and do sales or do those kind of things. I mean, I do a little bit, but. But then we have, say, Cindy, who is our current director, and she retired Miller Coors. She's over 30-year veteran, and so she ran the...
She was in the lab.
She was the lab director, so she oversaw inline testing, analytic testing, sensory analysis, so she oversaw all that stuff. But and then there's Tom Eplett, who would be the... I believe his title is Senior Technical Brewer at Miller Coors.
I think right.
And but essentially he's the brewmaster there, and right now he's acting plant manager, and so he has he's got to wear a lot of different hats. And then they're closing the brewery in September 1, so they've already started like all the Blue Moons are not being made there anymore.
I heard they lost the contract for PBR as well.
Yeah, I don't know. Oh, that's right, because someone bought the brand. I think it's moving back to the upper Midwest.
Yeah.
I think
they're going to start producing that and their other recipes that they were doing in the early 1800s.
Oh,
so we're getting the actual Blue Ribbon back.
Yeah, and I guess the other stuff they were doing at the time.
Chuggable.
Nowhere there.
I will shotgun one of them. Yeah. And so, and then of course we have Brad. So he would be the ag guy. So he's a farmer by trade, but it's his wheat fields, his barley fields, his hop yards and stuff like that. Oh, good.
That's good.
Brad was great for safety because, like, he does a lot of the, I guess, the lawn work and maintenance at RCC.
Mm-hmm.
So he really knows what he's talking about when you shouldn't do that or, you know.
Yeah.
That's going to hurt.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to die doing that.
Yeah, and I. Yeah, this is true. Yeah, you don't want to die at the job. And then, like, say, Keith, he's the chair of the department, and he does, like, motors, pumps, PLC, electrical work, because he's an electrician by trade. And so I think we got a good wide scope. And by the way, Tom, you know, he just stepped down. He was, past 2 years, he was the president of the MDA. So that's about the top. That's the top of the food chain for the whole, you know, country. And so I'm trying to think of some of the other, and you know, then we have some of the other instructors, but, say, a couple of the other schools that are in the community college system. A lot of times, like, say, at AB Tech, there's one person trying to teach the majority of the classes. And so, which is good. Jeff is skilled. And he was a Davis grad either a year before or a year after me. I forget which one. And he was running a production brewery in Iowa, if my memory serves me correctly. And he, you know, he's really skilled, but and he can teach... I guarantee he does a very good job teaching. But since the majority of the brewing classes are taught by only one person, there's not all those different angles from which
you're
a
not
particular
different
student...
perspectives, yeah.
Right, different, because what Tom would know, which is sky-high level of brewing knowledge, a lot of it, though, isn't translatable to a small brew pub like what I do.
Yeah.
Or... homebrewing. Like, I guarantee he's never homebrewed.
No, he hasn't.
And
he's
I guarantee, yeah, and I guarantee he's never mashed out. And I'm trying to think how long ago this was. This would have been near the end of summer last year. I had a gentleman called Mark Sammartino, and he's the technical director of the MBA right now. So he's that's top of the food chain. And he came to Liberty. We were doing an enzyme trial. It's a long story and proprietary, to be honest with you. But we were doing enzyme trial, and he was just there to just kind of oversee it. But I brewed with him. He retired Anheuser-Busch, and he was a brewmaster with them. And then after, and actually he and I met in Baldwinsville at the brewery in upstate New York when I was doing environmental compliance for him. And then right before I went to UC Davis. And so met up with him at an MBA meeting in Hillsboro and reconnected. That story is kind of funny, but we'll save that for the next podcast. And But anyway, so he came in, and he had never mashed out. So it's like, all right, here's a shovel.
He's like, what's this for?
Yeah, no idea. Here's a shovel and a dolly.
Usually I press a button, and it just, it's like, I don't know what happens to it.
I don't know what happens to it. Yeah, it just goes somewhere. It
goes away.
And that's not like every place?
Yeah.
No?
Somebody else's problem, not mine.
Yeah.
It's the janitor's problem.
Yeah. And it is funny having it. But then, of course, in the general sense of things, if say if I'm out in public at, well, it doesn't matter where I am, and I start a conversation with, I don't know, person XYZ, I guess it doesn't really matter, I would imagine that I would be considered like the expert in beer or brewing or whatever.
Yeah.
But when I'm hanging out with him, I don't know shit. Literally. It's, yeah. I don't know, and it's unbelievable how, like, you know, deep and thought he can get for a lot of things. And it's pretty impressive when you're talking to someone like that who would technically be a peer, but he's so beyond my experience level and knowledge level that it's pretty humbling, actually. So it's like, okay, watch what I say. The day before, you know, I clean the hell out of everything in the breweries. It's like, it's nice. Luckily, I do run a tight ship under normal circumstances.
Yeah.
Because the brewery at Liberty is pretty visual from the bar, so everyone can see it. And so I have to have it.
What size system and stuff are you running?
It's a 10-barrel system. So I have a 10-barrel specific mechanicals out of Vancouver, B.C., British Columbia, for those of you in podcast land. And so I have two 20-barrel fermenters, two 10-barrel fermenters, a 10-barrel bright tank that really just kind of buy you some time. And then I have 8 10-barrel serving tanks. So I'll have 8 beers that'll be on tap via serving tank, and then I have 2 just keg-only lines. So if I run out of, or I'm running out of a beer, I'll fill, empty the tank, fill kegs, you know, get those on tap at the via keg line, draft line, and then clean, prep the tank, and get the next beer on tap.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, so we'll have up to 10 beers on tap at any one time. We'll have 7 standard beers and then up to 3 seasonals.
Okay.
And so they kind of run the gamut by definition. You don't want to have the same type of beer if you're limited to only 10 beers on tap.
Yeah.
You got to make them as different as possible. Yeah. So we have our flagship would be Miss Liberty Lager, and that's the only beer we filter on the norm. And that's essentially a Czech Pilsner toned down to American lager specifications.
Okay.
So we have very soft water, Czech sots, hops, Czech yeast. So it's the Y-Yeast 2000, which is the Budvar yeast, Budweiser Budvar. And the grains are, loosely put, 90, I think it's 91% Pilsner, 9% light Munich. So real simple, lighter, usually finishes right at or just below 5% ABV. So that would be the flagship beer. The 2 wheat beers, one's an American wheat, almost 50% wheat, not hoppy or bitter at all. This is by definition a style supposed to be that way. So unfiltered, hazy American wheat. And then that will go on tap, and then after I rack half the batch, I'll add 80 pounds of pure blackberry puree I get from Oregon Fruit. And so a lot of times when brewers have fruit beers, they add either syrups or extracts.
Right.
And I think those are pretty phony. You can kind of see through them, and I don't like my fruit beers to be too sweet.
You can tell, because they get that syrupy quality to them. And you can see
it's really fake.
On the mouthfeel. Yeah. And
then there are, I think the best sweeter fruit beers, Rubaeus is good. That'd be Founders, and then the Cerise they make. Those are sweeter, but they use the real deal, which is nice. So you got that going for you.
How do you actually filter your lager?
I have a plate and frame.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yep. So let me think. I think it's 16 plates. I mean, it's small. I mean, it's a 10-barrel batch, and so I use Sites 1600, which I forget the porosity for that. I want to say it's around 5 micron, something like that.
You want to talk about the filtration process? We haven't covered filtration a whole lot on the podcast, so I just want to make sure everybody's in the loop.
Sure. If you'd like to talk about
how it works, because haven't talked
about
filtration.
I'm not super familiar, because I don't do it at work or anything, but...
Oh, and Eddie's does filter.
We do.
Oh, you don't.
I don't personally. I've never actually run the filter.
Ah, okay. So there's there's several different filters that you could utilize. And so one of the simpler ones would be, one of the best, when it comes to filtration, we're essentially clarifying the beer.
Yeah.
So I guess we could.
So for homebrewers, they're just crash it. They'll crash it in their cooler and, let the temperature go. And that's how homebrewers do it, but.
Well, and didn't you say there's a new.
Oh, there's also you can use
try?
Biofine or.
Yes.
Was it like silica?
Yeah, it's silicon oxide,
yeah.
I believe. I was talking with a guy briefly. He's also in the NBA about when you're adding. I almost said firm cap. That's an anti-foaming agent.
That sounds pretty awesome, too.
That stuff works fantastic. Yeah, it's great. I'm spacing over biofine. But you have to physically remove the biofine. And so if you're going to find your beers, you do need to filter it. Which, actually, I got to look into that. There's an adjunct manual that the TTB runs. And so that would be one of the stipulations. But craft brewers, we... You can just go with it. And,
a little under the radar.
Yeah, I'll have to look into that. But essentially, when it comes to beer, there's only really a handful of beer styles that you want hazy. So the Belgian white, the German Hefeweizen, usually wheat beers.
Yes.
The American wheat. A little bit of haze is acceptable, and actually quite a few different styles. But
yeah,
you don't want
your... predominantly like wheat-based is usually...
Yes.
That way.
Yeah, that has to do with the molecular weight of the proteins that wheat imparts. And so the famous protein Z. And so I think that's 40,000 molecular weight, I think, something like that. I'll have to read up. I haven't read up on that.
As it gets closer to the mic.
Yeah. But essentially, we want bright beer.
Yeah, because everybody likes to look at it and be like, ooh, it's so pretty, I can see through it. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to be, ooh,
yeah,
it's
murky. Historically, it would have been murky because it would have been fresh, but glassware wasn't owned by the commoners.
Right.
So once glassware came into play, clarity actually and the appearance of the beer became obviously definitely more important.
That makes sense.
And then, of course, when we're talking about long cold storage, like lagering, you'll just do natural clarification that way. Just let gravity take its toll.
And
but they're really small
time.
Particles, so they don't want to settle very fast. So time and temperature will be dictated by that. And then there's also certain yeast strains. I'm not sure if you've gotten into a flocculation for your
podcast.
So certain yeast strains.
They'll flock a little better.
Yeah, and this is all going to be variety dependent. And so flocculation is essentially the... ability of a...
I've told her about flocking.
Jeff taught me about flocking.
Hey, all right.
So I'm not going to explain it. You're doing such a good job.
I'm doing a great job.
Okay, yeah.
Fuck you. Episode title.
I better write that down. Every time we say that, we go back in the episode and be like, shit, what did Chris say should be the episode title? And then we never remember.
Fuck you.
And we end up picking something else. I like it. We remember that.
But yeah, so the ability of yeast to kind of aggregate together and settle out, or in certain cases of rising to the top in certain English strains, and then subsequently falling down. That's the process of flocculation. And so certain strains would like to stay in suspension, like the German Hefeweizen yeast or something like that. A lot of Belgian strains, they want to stay in suspension. And others, traditional English cask ales, or cask ale yeast, those they want to settle out.
Right.
So they want to drop.
Which is why you use 1272, because that's a pretty high flocking lit yeast strain.
Yeah, and it's a clean American
yeah,
yeast
you don't get
strain.
Much flavor profile out of it.
Yeah, usually the American yeasts are going to be on the cleaner side. But I do get tropical notes.
A little bit of citrus and stuff.
I do get that. So anyways, loosely put, that's what flocculation is. And so when it comes to beer clarification. Essentially, we could either filter it or we could separate it. So old school is you just let the beer sit for a really long time and cold.
Yeah.
So cold environment enhances the ability of not only the yeast to settle out of solution because it doesn't like to stay in suspension, but also the cold conditions, the proteins are going to come out of solution and they'll appear and then they'll be able to settle out. And that's why you always filter your beer cold.
Yep.
And so the coldest a beer will ever be in its entire lifetime is just prior to filtration. Because all those protein and polyphenol complexes, they're going to come out of solution. Then you can remove them with filtration. But back in the day, they just had to use time and just let that stuff settle out. So you never filter your beer warm. Otherwise, you'll filter out those, as I was saying before, those protein polyphenol complexes. So you run your filter, say, I don't know, for some dumb reason you want to filter your beer at 50 degrees or something like that. And you'll filter it out, but then you're going to throw your beer in the cooler or an ice chest or something like that. And then all of a sudden, what was once a filtered beer, those proteins are going to come out of solution, and all of a sudden you're going to have haze, and that's what's called chill haze.
Yeah.
But then if you let it warm up, it'll go away. Then you cool it down, it'll come back.
Wow.
But if you do that repetitively, like say 2-3 times, then chill haze transforms into permanent haze.
Yep.
And so then you can't get rid of it. And since it's in the bottle, that's the way the ball bounces. So old school would be just time, and it's enhanced with temperature, colder temperature. But you could run your beer through a centrifuge, which is technically it's separation. So what a centrifuge manipulates is actually Stokes' law. And so Stokes' law describes the settling of a particle in a medium. So technically it could be a ball bearing in air, because gases are fluids too. But in our case, we're going to have really, really small particles in essentially an aqueous solution, like what a beer is. Yeah, a little bit of alcohol, but loosely put, it's water. And so, but they're so small, you know, colloidal particles, they're too big to dissolve and not really big enough to settle rapidly. So that's why we have haze in our beer. So it's going to be dictated by viscosity of the liquid. Temperature is going to be dependent. Then you have the density difference between the particle and the liquid. Gravity is going to be a part of that. And so when we have our beer, well, we really can't manipulate any one of those except for gravity. And we can fake it by running it through a centrifuge.
Yeah.
So we'll spin it around at a very high rate, like say, I forget how fast they go, like say 5 to 10,000 RPM, and rapidly manipulate, make artificial gravity on the system. And so all those particles, and remember it's going to be cold, so those particles are coming out of solution, running through the centrifuge, and it goes out.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not going through a medium, it's called separation. As opposed to filtration, you're actually running your beer through, say, a diatomaceous earth or a perlite medium, or the plate and frame, they'll have cellulose sheets. Sometimes they have diatomaceous earth in them as well. And so you could run that through. But then there's ceramic filters and cartridge filters, and there's lenticular filters, and there's just really a style. And so it's essentially running your hazy beer through a medium. So running, to make a really quick example, is just have like a simple cheesecloth.
Mm-hmm.
And you run some whatever, I don't know, turbid liquid or something like they have, or it has particles, like larger particles.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything on the top of my head right now. The cheesecloth is going to retain those particles and the clear liquid is going to pass through. Well, picture that, but the porosity is really, really small now. And so it'll entrap yeast cells. And then again, I was saying those protein and polyphenol complexes. So those are going to be removed. Did I answer that right?
Yeah, but it's also for anyone who doesn't know what a centrifuge is it's kind of like an acorn shaped object or machine that pretty much beer comes in, it's spinning super fast, so all the particles are going outward. And then every so often, it'll just fire them out. So they'll leave solution, and the clean beer goes out.
Mm-hmm.
Things are loud as hell, too.
Yeah, they do get loud. But you'll increase your yield, no doubt. your volumetric yield increases.
Yes,
which is nice.
Didn't we recently visit a brewery and you pointed one out, Jeff?
Oh, we went to Trogs.
Trogs had one.
Trogs has a centrifuge.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, and locally, well, your podcast goes everywhere, right? The World Wide Web.
Yep.
Yes.
But if you are, a local, local breweries using one, obviously Miller and Eden, but the public can't go to that. Foothills at their production brewery, they have a centrifuge. Old Hickory now has a centrifuge, really for about a month now, and it's working really well. And they not only use it on the cold side on beer, but they'll use it on the hot side for wort. So hopped wort, and that's how they rid their tube. And their volumetric yield goes sky high.
So instead of doing a whirlpool, they'll use a centrifuge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
And so as you could imagine, if any you homebrewers out there, if you took all your tube, I don't suggest this, but if you took all your tube from your kettle after you're done with your knockout, and you had, you know, temperature gloves or whatever, mm-hmm. and you squeezed it, there's going to be a lot of wort that's going to come out of there.
Yeah,
and so if you run a centrifuge on the hot side, you can greatly increase your volumetric yield.
Absolutely,
which is a really smart idea. And so they do it for both beer and for wort.
Yeah,
which is cool. Yeah, it is loud.
Yeah,
yeah, no doubt.
Jeff's walking away.
I'm sorry,
he's coming back.
Settled. The pup is being a little antsy. Got a lot of people here.
Actually, jumping a little bit backwards.
Oh, okay.
Going back to...
back in time.
Back in time. Back to the future, and then back again.
Wasn't that date recent? Like last year or something?
Yeah, it was October.
October.
We have a mock newspaper.
The USA Today. There's a USA Today that was talking about how, what was the baseball team that won in the movie?
Cubs.
How the Cubs won when they almost won in real life, but it was... They printed the front page of the newspaper was an exact copy of the one in the movie.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it is cool.
And the inside page is like a movie promo for Jaws 19 or whatever.
And it was the billboard from the movie as well. Yeah.
Cool. What I wanted to ask actually is, do you find in the program with people coming in to their first semester, you find people kind of drop out because... Like you said, brewing is not what people expected it to be.
Yeah,
I could definitely.
That's a good question. I guarantee Jeff could corroborate.
So my first semester, Todd's class, everyone was like, "Oh man, this is just going to be a drinking class. This is going to be great. We're gonna come in and we're just going to drink beer all night."
I can guess just from the 40 minutes we've been talking, that is the opposite of what your class is like.
So it started with 20 plus, 25-ish probably, maybe 30.
I'm thinking yours might have been 23 or 4.
But then slowly people started just not showing up for class, dropping out. And then that's who you knew who was really going to go through the program. I think we ended with 11? 12?
Yeah, I think so.
Somewhere around there?
Yeah, it's about a 50% attrition.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so, say we start with 20. Well, you actually don't have to quantify it, I guess. That'd scare people away. We want you to enroll.
Especially if you listen to this. If you listen to this, you're probably more the type of person who should enroll than...
Oh, yeah, without doubt. Yeah, you definitely should enroll.
Rockingham Community College.
Specifically if you're enjoying this episode.
Yeah.
Go ahead and enroll. Do yourself a favor.
If you understood anything Todd was talking about.
Or want to.
Yeah,
one of the... yes, a lot of people think it's going to be a beer drinking class. And they're not ready for chemistry, micro, basic engineering principles. And if, in the hypothetical, if you're interested in joining the program, I highly recommend it. It should be mostly information to be on the website. But you're going to be getting a degree in Associates in Applied Science. And if you don't think there's going to be science in I don't know what you're thinking. We will have a few guaranteed. I think this has happened every fall semester. Immediately there'll be, say, 3 or 4 that immediately drop out. And this would be a bad aspect of of culture of people getting their Pell Grant check and leaving and dropping out.
Yeah.
And we all pay for that, by the way.
Yeah.
And so there'd be a great way if we could corral that in somehow. I don't know how. But, and then there will be, usually it's that by the first exam, they'll be like, oh,
oh, this is hard.
Yeah, this is like
this is like 15 questions of just essays. This sucks.
Yeah, and to a great extent, it's like, huh, well, I'm happy to disappoint you, to be honest.
Yeah.
And because it would be doing a disservice to the college, it'd be doing a disservice to myself personally, and it'd be doing a disservice if our to the whole brewing populace. If we had a cushy program that were easy A's, and we put people out into the industry that didn't know a damn thing.
No, people are going to get hurt.
Yeah.
Like, that's the biggest thing. Like,
and make bad beer.
And that's also true.
Yeah, we don't want any part of that. And so those that have made it through, we have a near 100% in-industry job placement, which is pretty fantastic considering... If you got a degree in mathematics, well, you may or may not be doing math for your profession. Or you got a job in business, but you might not be doing business of some variety. Or philosophy. I don't know.
Mm, if you're like me and got a, I'm a BA in English.
Okay.
Doing jack shit with it.
However, and it, but so that just has to be said. And that happens with virtually every program. Regardless of major.
Yeah.
It'd be rare if you give 100% job placement and it's in industry. We're near 100%. So, for example, the very first, I think there's only one out of the 10, because the very first year, I think 10 got out, and I think all 9 are in the industry. And so we have, let's see, 2 are at Red Oak. We have, I don't know, half an Addie Greens, I think.
I was going to say, I can attest because I've hired like 4 people from the program.
And let's see, I mean, 2 own or run
homebrew shops,
which is great. Eric from Triad, and then Ryan Jackals in, at Big Dance. And then Aaron Wall, he's a great success story. He's the lead brewer at Wicked Weeds Production Brewery.
Yeah.
So he's doing 50 barrel batches.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Almost twice a day, and he's rocking. Yeah. So all the bottled beer that, well, not all the bottled beer, all the non
clean
funk,
beer.
Yeah, all the clean beer. All the clean beer in bottles, or I guess kegs for that matter, that'll become from Aaron. And and it's just, it's good to see that.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, it is funny. Like, I go to Natty Green's, I'm like, whoa. Oh, hey guys, hey, whoa, hey, what's up?
College,
you're still there, yeah. Yeah, and then, you know, some people are doing startups, so one is in Southern Virginia. Yeah, there's a handful of us. And then, let's see, one's at Pig Pounder, Leslie, she's on the marketing,
sales marketing side of things. I think she's learning still, the brew, maybe.
Oh.
Maybe, I don't know.
In class, she is.
There you go.
Yeah, Anita right now, she's at Mystery. She transferred from AB Tech in Asheville.
Cool. I'm excited to meet her. We've been chatting with her, right? Hoping to get her on an episode in the future.
Oh, yeah. Have you know the movie Strange Brew?
She's never seen it.
Oh, okay.
It's
well,
on the list.
Have you seen it?
Yeah,
Have you seen it?
I haven't.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, we have to have a movie night. I have my students, they borrow it.
It's Rick Moranis and... what's the other guy's name?
They're from SCTV. I forget his name. It's the McKenzie brothers.
Yeah.
But you have to watch it and try to have strange brew jokes throughout and don't tell her about it.
There's a dog
just,
in the movie.
Introduce.
Oh, well, then I'm going to love it.
Oh, yeah. There's a dog in the movie. Hose head. He has a skunk stripe. This is funny. So do that. Mention strange brew.
Just throw it in there.
Very casually.
Yes.
Too.
The program, to go back to it I think I started tangenting away.
But in a very good way.
But it's probably like great for you to see that all these people that you've taught are now in the industry and doing well.
Oh yeah, yeah, without doubt. And then sometimes they're like, "Hey Todd, you're telling the truth." Like, I'm like, what do you think? I'm shitting you? just for play.
Yeah.
Although I do try to bring humor into the. Because it would be boring to have a really dry.
You don't want a beer class that's not fun.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Drawing hop sacks on the wall.
Oh, that's. Yeah, it was your class. In fact, I mentioned that. I had a drawing. I had to describe the Burton Union system of fermentation. And it's kind of a long. You have essentially a series of barrels where your primary fermentation takes place, and the bunghole that'll be on top of the barrel, there'll be essentially a tube or a hose or something attached, or a pipe attached to a main trough that will collect the barm, because it'd be English style, so the Germans call it Kreuzen, but the yeast that comes off,
like a blow
and,
off.
Yeah, it's like the blow off, but it's a whole series. So the first stuff you'll discard, and then the second one, or maybe third one, that's what you'll use for the subsequent batch.
Okay.
And so I was ready, I got asked about it. So I was like, oh, all right. And I heard, I don't know who said it, oh, I can't wait for you to draw the Burton Union. I'm like, all right. Yeah, it looks okay, that's all right.
Sounds like something Jordan would say.
Oh, Jordan, another former student. He's doing well.
Yes.
Yeah. I guess he has one class left. Something like that?
I'm not sure.
I think so.
He
doesn't
probably,
have
he's almost
one.
Done.
I want to say he's doing Brad's class. I don't know.
But what you end up drawing.
Oh, well, I mean, I did the Burton Union. Oh, yeah, to go back in time in your class, I was trying to visually depict with an expo and a dry erase board dry hopping inside of a cask. And the dry hop sock looked like a dangling scrotum. And yeah,
everybody knew it.
Everyone knew. And then I don't know how red I was. I think I just put my hand in.
And then there was actually a handprint. You put your hand on the wall.
Yeah, it was. I drew a nut sack on the wall. I
think Cindy was in the class too. As well.
Yeah. And it's not like it does. It's like, oh my gosh. It was just one of those funny moments. And I also had a moment kind of like that with we did brown ales weeks ago. And so I brought my, I have an English brown ale that I always have on tap, and Natty's had their
Old Town Brown.
Buckshot, Old Town, did Anita, no, Mystery, there's a Pig Pounder one, and then I brought Samuel Smith.
Oh, nice.
Brown ale, because that could show where diacetyl is kind of like a good thing, you know, the small ones. And, so I was like, okay, well, I think we should have the Sam Smith last. I think we should do yours first, because I think mine's bigger than yours. And then I started, and I was like,
walked right into it.
Yeah, I walked right into it.
That's what she said.
Yeah, I think mine's bigger than yours. Well, there's only one way to find out. That's by putting it in the mouth and swallowing it.
By the way, your second beer is really good.
Oh,
this is awesome.
It's delicious.
Can I have some?
You may. The hops did fall out. They're still there a little bit.
That's okay. I mean, it's almost a year and a half old.
It's very malty.
Yeah.
And boozy a little bit.
I love
it. Is boozy.
Just boozy enough.
Yeah.
Not boozy enough to get that throat hit, but enough to know it's there.
Yeah, and the woods background. In fact, I'm not a big fan of those honeycombs. I like the spirals better.
I've never used those. I use like the cubes or the chips.
Yeah, I actually try to use the spirals. They're a little more expensive, but I like the character better.
Oh, rather. Mm-hmm. I may have to try that.
Yeah, the chips, because I think they just don't age well. Like when you're storing them, or even they could be in a bag or something like that. I don't think they last so well. Oh, it's a Natty Green's dog collar.
Yeah.
Hey,
what's up?
She also has a Raleigh Brewing Company handkerchief.
Oh, neat.
So she likes to wherever we go and we see dog merch from breweries.
Oh, that's cool.
Pick it up.
But yeah, so we do have a good success story with our students. So they're doing a good job now, which I like. And so when I go to breweries and visit, there's always a, well, not always.
You
sometimes
see
there's
somebody
a,
you know.
Yeah. I'm like, hey, what's up? And I always bring beer.
I was
going to
say, then you get some free beer.
I get free beer. It's good to be the brewer. No doubt. Yeah, it's fun.
It's true. We're usually the place people congregate because we have the most beer of our
at
group.
Least 15 gallons at any time.
Yeah, they like that.
Yeah. We actually just got a fourth keg, which is right behind you, so now we'll be full capacity soon.
And soon it's going to be the a funk tap.
Oh, hello.
So, yeah, okay. We actually have two beers going right now. We have a Flanders still going.
In there?
No, they're in the, I'll show you, they're in the bathroom closet.
Oh, okay.
And then we did a Golden, which we threw Brett, Lacto, and PDO in. So
and eventually fresh peaches and apricots.
Oh, great.
So
yeah, give those things time.
Oh, yeah,
they're
just
very slow acting.
Well, the Flanders has been gone for almost a year, and probably another year.
There's a nice little pellicle on it. It's looking really gross.
Cool.
Yeah, like a little blue cheese
layer.
Yeah.
That's what the Saison looked like. It was like cottage cheese. It was like little bubbles, and they didn't move.
Oh, you're not embracing the funk?
But you
drink? Oh, no, I like the funk. It's good. It's good, but when you look at it, it's just too...
He's like, oh,
is that safe to drink?
You're like, I'm drinking this?
It's kind of when you find out what happens at, like, fast food places. But
yeah.
Then you still eat it.
Right. Well, and I also, full disclaimer, I made, this is such a sidebar, I made some mac and cheese the other day, like Velveeta mac and cheese, but like a knockoff kind, and I cooked the macaroni, and there was just this foam layer on top, and I was like, huh, I wonder what that is, so I put my finger through it, just plastic.
Oh.
Yeah, so now just talking about it made me just...
Yeah.
Have flashbacks to that. So, and that's not even the cheese. Who knows what's in the cheese?
Who knows?
Yeah.
Yummy.
Yum. Yeah.
Okay.
But, no, but a good sour beer is much better than... I don't know why
I
compared it to McDonald's.
No, it was just...
Sour beer is McDonald's.
No.
Weird thing.
We replaced, like, for, like, special occasions. Like, you know, you pop a bottle of champagne. We go and get ourselves a sour.
Oh,
that is,
nice.
That's our thing.
That's our
thing. Do you have, like, a particular go-to? Do you like the cleaner sours? Do you like the really, you know, very funky, like, goes and
I like really
lambics?
Funky.
Oh,
the funkier, the better.
That's
like, sometimes I have to take an antacid before we open.
There's been a couple natties.
Yeah, some of the natties are acidic.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really. But the natties, was it the Perzik?
The Perzik.
Is one of my favorites.
Yeah, those are good.
Yeah, yeah. We've been working through all the Wicked Weeds, but also trying to find other things.
We just picked up two bottles of the, well, it's not a sour, but we picked up two bottles of Orval. We got two different dates.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll do another episode where we kind of compare them. Because I think they're like, a year apart, at least.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Brett will definitely be coming out.
And then, yeah, a little bit of hop in this one and more Brett in that one.
We also just picked up...
a Bend Orval. It's beautiful.
Mm. Well, Poem Potables, next Saturday, the 27th, is doing Orval Day.
Oh. Yeah, so I'm wondering if they're going to have a keg of it or something.
Whoa.
Yeah.
But they don't go through Orval, because the Orval that I picked up was 2013...
2012?
Whoa.
Yeah.
No, 2013.
2013.
Because he was 3 years old, because the guy said that he's never seen anyone buy it.
Yeah.
Whoa, that's
like
a go-to.
I picked up a bottle of it.
Wow,
yeah.
That's like one of the gold, the holy grails of beardom.
I know. It was on the bottom shelf, like...
Dusty.
Yeah, it was very dusty.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm gonna take that.
Hell yeah. Well, like, it couldn't have been more than $7, right? Like $6.
It was like $5.
Oh,
yeah.
$5. Oh, jeez, man, I can start going there.
Yeah,
yeah, they have really good prices.
Great. They always have new fun stuff.
Hmm.
We always see something different whenever we go.
Oh, that's good.
And we just picked up
Poem Potables.
Yeah.
Evil Twins, Ryan and the Gosling. They're Brett Pale.
Oh,
mm-hmm. Yeah, we haven't tried it yet.
Yeah, we haven't
very
tried
curious,
it
curious, because we've had the Steel String Brettmann.
We opened it too soon.
I think we did open it too soon because there was no Brett character.
Oh.
It was pretty much a
We drank it like 2 months out. We should have waited. We should have sat
on so, because I'm just curious if they did primary, if you did primary fermentation with Brettanomyces, it should be very apparent.
Yeah.
But if you bottle condition with Brett.
I think they bottled. I don't know. I'm
then
not
you
sure.
Gotta give it, yeah.
You gotta give it a couple months.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, I mean, I'm curious on the, you said a 3-year-old Orval? 4-year-old?
Yeah, at least. Oh,
three.
Check. But
a
at least
three.
Three
and a two.
Three and a two,
oh,
yeah.
Cool.
So it should be good to.
Good experiment.
Mm, very nice. Yeah, I love me some Orval. That stuff's great.
Yeah.
But, yeah, do you guys have any social media? You guys have.
Yeah, my, like Facebook.
Okay. I'm trying to help
any,
you plug the your brewery.
Or any,
oh.
Like, do you guys do events or any?
Yeah, we do, obviously the look, because we're just a brew pub,
mm-hmm.
So we don't, like, when it comes to beer festivals, we're not going to Wilmington, we're not going
mm-hmm.
to Asheville, something like that. So we keep it within the greater Triad area. So we'll do, say, Boone, Hickory, Charlotte, there's one in obviously in High Point, the Greensboro Beer Festival, and we used to do the Raleigh and Durham World Beers, but they always time it around the International Furniture Market, and so there's this.
Oh, you guys are swamped at that point.
Oh my god, it's the busiest time of the year.
Okay.
So it'd be senseless for us to, you know,
go there.
Send beer out there. Yeah.
And plus, I mean, Raleigh or exaggerate to prove one. So like, say Wilmington or yeah, we'll just use Wilmington. It's like oh. Invariably, you're going to have someone that likes your beer. Hey, where can I get this? And I'm like, oh, you got to drive.
You can't get it anywhere.
Yeah, you
got to
drive 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, we are on tap, and it'd be sporadic, you know, random, but like Beer Co. here in town,
mm-hmm.
Gate City Growlers, 1618 Wine Lounge, we're on tap. Winston-Salem, be Jughead, City Beverage, Brewer's Kettle, both of those will be on tap. I'm on tap at the Brewer's Kettle very often, just because it's right up the road.
Yeah.
And David has a really good selection. And I do one-off beers for him that are completely different from what we would normally on have.
Yeah.
So I'll have like an existing beer and adulterate it somehow. So anyway, so those will be like as far as events. And then actually at the brewery, say we'll do like an oyster roast. That's actually
mm-hmm.
coming up in April. Early April, I forget what was it the first Saturday April, whatever that day is.
So that's soon.
Yeah,
that's pretty soon.
And then
sure.
we do like March Madness
weeks,
things for the customers for our Mug Club members, and so they will randomly get a team selected, and depending on how far your team goes, you get extra like bonus, you know,
oh,
like even
really
gift
cool.
certificates.
Yeah.
And if you win, your team wins is 100 cash.
Nice,
that's awesome.
But then you'll be like, you get. Yeah, gift certificates for beer and all, you know, or for food or whatever, and then work it all the way up, and then it ends up being cash prizes. So if you luck out and get like Kansas or something like that,
you're saying
have
pretty
a really good chance of doing really well,
yeah.
And so it instigates more people coming in and watching the games and stuff.
That's really cool.
So yeah, let's see what else do we do. Yeah, and then the random. Oh, actually, there's going to be a beer fest, small one. At the Greensboro Science Museum in
two weekends. The Bubbles and Bruiser.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
And that's cool. We did it last
year.
There's
a lot of really good breweries going to that.
Mm-hmm.
I looked at the list. It's probably like 30 at least ones.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
And we did it last year. That was the first year. And it's a cool event.
Yeah.
We get to go around. We were in the main room next to the Otters. And
oh, yeah.
And
that's penguins.
Penguins?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds
penguins
like
and
the best place to be.
Yeah.
Both awesome.
Yeah. And they had this one thing you could go underneath, and then you could put your head up in a bubble, and then you're kind of like in their environment. But I had poop all over it.
No.
So, on the inside.
Yeah.
Not very good.
That sounds like fun. That's coming up too.
That's very soon. I think that's
two or three weekends.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's coming up.
Okay.
Yeah, then beer fest season's going to start cranking up. Hickory Hops is my favorite.
That's coming up very soon.
That's April 16th, 19th, something like that.
Okay.
And that's my favorite beer fest in the
state. I heard that's one of the best, yeah.
Oh, you should go.
I should go.
We should go.
We should go.
We should go as a podcast.
Ooh. We'll have to go into look into that.
That might be a good idea. Yeah. I could contact the organizer.
Yeah, let us know.
That would be fantastic.
Get us passes or something.
Oh, yeah, we'll see what we can do.
Cool. That'd be awesome.
Podcast it. Oh,
podcast.
Doggy.
Yeah, we'll take pictures and mingle and all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So on our end, some cool events that we know are coming up. This Saturday, not only is it my birthday.
Oh!
Yep.
Hey, guys. Our good friend and band, Bear With Me, will be playing at the Blind Tiger.
Blind Tiger.
Cool.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah. Okay. Chris.
I've just got a show the night, too.
Oh,
Chris
hell,
also
man.
Has a show.
Where are you guys playing at?
The punk band Thieves for Jesus is playing in New York Pizza.
Okay.
That's our side project. So I'll probably end up
so,
Blind
yeah,
Tiger
check
too.
Out both of those. Those are...
If you don't know what to do, we'll be hopping around Greensboro. The next day, don't get too drunk because it is Old Town's Beer Run Sunday morning. And as I said, the following weekend will be Orval Day at Poem Potables, which we'll be at because we just discussed how much we enjoy it.
Yeah, cool.
So, yeah. We'll be posting more fun events.
And then,
and
I normally
like
don't plug myself on this podcast, but you asked about the first one. Also, Time Machine Drive-By is playing a show on Sunday night at New York Pizza, so I'm doing back-to-back. But that is a benefit show. So if you're not tired of drinking, by the time you do all this other awesome stuff all over the weekend, come drink for a benefit. I don't remember what it is. I'm sure
we'll post about it, let you know.
We'll plug it into the episode. And
perfect.
Then, yeah, follow us.
Do we know what our next episode is? Is it the taste test? Are we doing that next?
Oh,
we'll get Carly probably on the next one.
We're waiting. Our good friend Carly, who is the beer den master at the Jamestown Lowe's Foods, she hasn't been feeling very well. She's seeing a specialist for something or other. I don't want to talk about her personal life.
Keep her in your thoughts.
But, yeah, keep her in your thoughts. Hopefully soon. We'll be doing the crappy Pilsner taste testing?
Yes.
We want to
kind of a blind test of macro and micro.
Oh, those are good to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've done those with malt liquors before. It's great.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it'll be fun.
And by the way, Schlitz malt liquor is good. Like, I ain't shitting you.
There you go. And speaking of that, we also have been talking about doing a bourbon taste testing.
Ooh.
And then also following in the same episode, we will be tasting some bourbon barrel aged beers and try to pull out some of those flavors. Mm. So hopefully we can get...
Those are going to be simultaneously?
Yeah, we like
yeah,
to call
yeah.
it the taxicab episode.
Oh
yeah,
my.
That'll definitely be a weekend episode.
That'll be a Friday or Saturday.
We're talking to a couple different whiskey bars and see if someone who really is a specialist.
So if there's a specialist out there
listening.
Bourbon and whiskey.
Okay.
Yeah, no, we want... We want someone who really knows their stuff because we're the beer people. We need a whiskey bourbon person. So
I like that.
Yeah.
That should be fun.
So, and if you guys have any cool ideas like that or any games you want us to play to keep it interesting, we like to break it up. Just email us, Facebook
I like
us.
To break it down.
There you go. We like that too.
Yeah.
So... you want to get a beer with us? As we always say, message us. We're always out and about all the time.
Please, please, please. I cannot express to you how important it is that you rate our podcast on iTunes. And I know I'm the person that when I listen to a podcast and somebody says to do that, I don't do it either. But it really helps us out a lot. And we would absolutely love it if you guys could help rate and subscribe and comment.
Beer's good for you.
Beer's good for you.
Beer is good for you.
Yeah.
That could be a whole other episode.
Yeah,
we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram. We're always posting
and
cool
Untapped.
Stuff.
Don't forget
Untapped. And
Untapped.
We usually check
in. We rate the beers we drink so we can weed out the bad ones for you guys.
I wonder how I did today.
You'll find out later.
Because I don't do this. I don't do the rate beer, beer advocate, Untapped. And then, but when I randomly, hey, you're on that? Hey, go to my brewery. Let's look these things up. I'm like, what? There's no way.
This tastes like dirty sucks.
Yeah. Whoa. Fuck. Oh, man. We went through that special keg in like a night.
At least people aren't rating your opinions on the internet, because that's real fun.
Yeah, that's true.
But at least your stuff isn't going out in packaging out very, very far.
This is
You've
true.
Got a very niche market
there. You know
there.
Exactly where your thing is and
yeah,
where your product could be.
The immediate locale. And you
so
know
you
what?
Can
that's
find cool. those people.
Yeah. I got to know their, what do you call
their handle?
Monikers or whatever.
Yeah.
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 But yes, please rate and subscribe. Follow us on all
yes.
of our social media. And reach out to us if you have any questions,
yeah.
ideas, want to be a guest.
And if you want to enroll in RCC, please do. Because
yeah.
as you can see from me and many other people, you can get a job in the industry. And
yeah,
awesome.
We can throw that info in the show notes.
Yes, we definitely
cool.
can.
Todd can teach you.
He will. He is tough. He will not sugarcoat it. His tests are hard.
I couldn't remember everything he just said.
Yeah.
And it's funny because we just started getting, like for the semester, we just started getting into fermentation. Because essentially it's the life of beer.
Yeah.
So first raw ingredients, then malting, and then you know, milling operations, brew house operations, so mashing regimes, kettle operations, whirlpooling.
Yeah.
Heat exchange, the role of oxygen, and then now we just started fermentation.
That's
and
the fun part.
They're in for they're not into chemistry, they're in for
what a treat. A
real treat. Yeah. But it's all good. But it's fun. We do have a fun time in class. And we have the only actually Cindy's too. I mean our program has the only caveat for no alcohol on campus, which is kinda cool.
That is cool.
You do get to drink a good amount of beer in the class, which
yeah.
is fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's for science.
Is it?
It's for science and education.
Do you think it helps? This is, oh, we're already over time. Do you think it helps to have a class where your students are adults? You think that makes it easier to teach?
Well, you have to be 20. I'm not sure if I read the question.
You have to be 21 to be
You got to be 21
but
to be
teach,
So you feel like that's easier.
Older adults.
No, because last semester I had some people that just wanted to come just to take it because they thought it was going to be cool.
Yeah.
And they're not in class
right.
this
okay.
semester.
Okay. Yeah.
So they just thought it was cool. And they're like, you know, they already have full-time jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I'm just taking it for fun. I really don't study and everything. I'm like, I know you don't study. Your average sucks. I don't tell them that. That's my inner monologue. That's just my inner monologue. But having... Yeah, you know, the younger people is better because there's that, you know, just the vigor of youth.
Yeah.
But then having someone that might be, say, oh, I don't know, just loosely put like 25 to 35 years old, still in their very formative years,
mm-hmm.
but they just want to make a life change.
Yeah.
Then their drive is completely different.
Yeah.
And so they're usually the A's and B's without question.
Yeah. Okay.
So the fresh 21-year-olds, they sometimes can be in for a rude awakening, too. Especially
yeah.
if they've never been to college before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, well, welcome to college.
That's, what,
that's
yeah.
the way it works.
Cool.
Awesome.
You want to sign us off, Jeff?
Yeah, this is Scratch It for you. Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers. Take it easy. Thinking.